Well, thank you all for coming this morning. It's my honor and my duty, as required by our Home Rule Charter, to share an annual State of the City message with you. As I thought through what I wanted to say, what I wanted to share with you, I was really struck by how connected we all are. We, as Columbians, are individuals, we're families, we're neighbors, we're not just a city, we're a community. And what happens to one person, you know, one family, one neighborhood, it just ripples throughout Columbia. Because we're connected, we acknowledge that the hope of a fine life in our city is more likely for some than for others. I'm constantly reminded that there are troubling financial, health, and employment gaps between Columbia's white families and black families. However, there is reason for hope. As I've said in the past, we only need to look around us, that Columbia has incredible resources and the ability to change its current reality, to assure that its high quality of life is available for all citizens. We envision a Columbia that's the best place for everyone, not just for some, to live, work, learn, and play. We envision a community where people can earn enough money to support their family without asking for help. Vision a Columbia where residents feel safe and secure and like their neighborhoods. Envision a community where, regardless of what part of the city they live in, families know they can rely on police and fire protection, utility services, and well-maintained streets and sidewalks, and a good transit system. We envision a community where people choose to call home because life is good there. That's a pretty good wrap-up of our strategic plan. But less than a year ago, many of you, our partners, were here with me in this room when we unveiled the City Council's bold strategic plan in an effort to address five priority issues: the economy, social equity, public safety, infrastructure, and operational excellence. So this morning, I'm pretty excited to share with you some of the amazing accomplishments from just the past few months, 8 months, really. First, I'd like to honor and thank several partners with long traditions of shrinking the gap in well-being for Columbia families. Their work is part of what ripples through the community. So the City of Columbia partners with them through projects that we share jointly, funding relationships, and shared services that we provide to residents. So through their poverty simulations, Central Missouri Community Action has awakened many people in Columbia, including me, to the persistent problem of poverty in Columbia. So is there someone from CMCA this morning? We thank you for your work. The Heart of Missouri United Way believes that when we reach out a hand to one, we influence the condition of all. So last year's campaign funded close to $3 million, I believe, in programs with long-term community impact, focusing on what it takes to help young people succeed. Columbia Public Schools has an intense focus on graduating students, and that is paying off. The graduation rate increased 8% in just 5 years. And we know that the 18-year-old who enters the workforce with a diploma, or GED, has a very good chance to get out and stay out of poverty. So we thank them for that work. JobPoint has worked for decades to give folks a second chance, get ready for work, sometimes their first chance. So last year they served 432 people, the wide range of workplace challenges. And every year the Columbia Housing Authority helps 1,900 families. That's huge. That's a big number. 1,900 families throughout the city. So working with Welcome Home, the Veterans Administration, shelter insurance, and others, the Housing Authority built Patriot Place. It's a 4-acre campus. It includes apartments and support services and helps returning veterans get back on track and reconnect to civilian life. It's a terrific work you're doing there, Phil. So work of organizations like these truly benefits all of us, and that's something we should remember. They are the folks bailing the water in that image you just saw. So the City Council's strategic plan is intended to address these gaps that we see in Columbia. Council members wisely used savings from previous fiscal years to begin to walk this new path. So here's where they invested those funds. They put $500,000 into Veterans Welcome Home to house homeless veterans. They put $200,000 into 4 energy-efficient affordable homes. They put $100,000 for home ownership programs, the down payment assistance that we offer. There was $50,000 for Cradle to Career for early childhood learning, and $100,000 for focus group research. That's so we could learn more about this disconnect between reality and perception of crime and growth in Columbia, and neighborhood needs as well. So $500,000 went to the Columbia Regional Airport Terminal, and that's a huge economic development investment. So these programs are making a difference in connecting and strengthening our community. So now I'd like to briefly share what we see, what we've done, and what lies ahead in our 5 strategic priorities. So regarding the economy, as I mentioned last year, there truly are 2 Columbias. Our community's citywide unemployment rate remains about 3%. That's one of the lowest in the nation. Yet many Colombians work full-time jobs that don't pay living wage. So our community's black households bear the brunt of low wages, higher than average unemployment, and poverty. Well, the only way out of poverty is a job that pays a living wage. And cultivating good jobs and preparing our residents to qualify for those jobs really is the strongest steps we can take as a city to help defeat poverty. So our goal is to increase the number of people in Columbia with income above 200% of the federal poverty level. That equates to a living wage. In the past 8 months, we've seen steady progress towards career training. I believe an individual's success has roots in childhood, with quality education and high school graduation strongly linked to future success. So because the community continues to support public schools, graduation rates improved to 90% in 2014. 90%. Since 1982, the city's Career Awareness Related Experience, or CARE program, has prepared at-risk youth, that's 14 to 20, for employment. So in addition to paid real-world experience, CARE helps participants get job ready, find a mentor, explore careers, and manage their money. If only this were around when I was 14, right? The last summer, we paid the wages of 169 young folks who worked in the community. Of that group, 160 completed the program, and 42 were offered employment. The Mechatronics Certificate and Degree Program, offered at the Columbia campus of Moberly Area Community College, MAC, is a model for how united partnerships can lead to economic success. So we launched it in 2012, but MAC launched it, with partnerships with the city's Economic Development Department and a committee of local employers. So Mechatronics provides trainees with hands-on experience in electrical systems, hydraulics, pneumatics, computer control equipment. And graduates are finding jobs at 3M, Kraft, JM Eagle, Boone Hospital Center, with starting wages of $16 an hour and higher. So living wage jobs. This year we launched the city's first real drive to widen opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses. As our contractor, Jim Witt, Jim's here, I saw him, he's helping inspire owners and others to work with the city staff to reduce the bureaucratic barriers that put small firms at a competitive disadvantage. A summit he organized, connecting these businesses with state and local officials and large purchasers, more importantly, was standing room only. So, switching gears to social equity, it has so many meanings. It's a big concept, inspires global and community action. It's a precise idea that moves us to be our brothers and sisters' keeper, and a lot more in between. It's guided by our strategic plan. The city will assess citizens' ability to thrive, not just survive, in Columbia. We know there are disparities among neighborhoods, including the level of public investment and the focused attention we've provided. At least initially, we will leverage city services and community partnerships in Columbia's central, east, and north areas, the first, second, and third wards. Census data, and other information that we prepared, other information, including city staff field observations. They all revealed varying levels of stress and disparity in neighborhoods, along with resources. So according to our most recent citizen survey, 74% of residents overall are satisfied that they can thrive in Columbia. Now, the interesting thing is 78% of white residents feel like they can thrive, but only 54% of black residents feel like they can thrive in Columbia. So our goal is to increase the percentage of citizens who agree with that statement, that they can thrive in Columbia. So at the community level, city council members co-hosted a race and equity forum, which drew almost 100 people. With our community partners, we are committed to being part of the conversation that raises local awareness of race and equity. On a personal level, and at her own expense, City Utilities staff member Carol Schaefer, who's here, reaches out to homeless people, and her generous spirit inspires others, including me. She gives granola bars wrapped with information about homeless shelters, support services, and gives them to folks who look like they might want to have that kind of help. So too do her friends, who also made granola bars wrapped with this information, and some local organizations. So she's a quiet leader and an individual force for good. Thank you, Carol. As a united force, city employees are engaging residents in our three neighborhoods as never before. It's really a work from the heart. And we're betting that thriving is associated with several factors: safe and secure neighborhoods, strong relationships between neighbors, and affordable housing and utilities. So here are some of the things we've done since January. We created a community outreach unit in the police department. Maybe you've heard of this. By assigning two officers to each of the focused neighborhoods, we've established a consistent, trusted, and focused presence for safety and security. We've connected neighbors through more than 20 activities in the areas. A lot of those are parks. With the Ridgeway Neighborhood Association and other partners, we developed a model affordable housing plan. We allocated more funds for first-time homebuyers and affordable housing units in the focus neighborhoods and started work to set up a community land trust to stabilize housing prices. We studied residential energy use in the Derby Ridge area and hosted an energy efficiency resource fair at the neighborhood school's parent-teacher night. So look, another example of partnering. We went to the schools to provide that information. So with community partners, we are providing summer lunch programs through the health department and weekly mobile food pantries for kids and families. We started work with historically black church congregations to connect parishioners with health insurance and health services. Glenn Cobbins and Judy Hubbard back there, thanks for coming. They have proven abilities to identify with and reach, inspire people. They're going door to door having conversations in the central neighborhood, and they're going to go to the second and third ward too. They talk to students, older disabled persons, black residents, persons with few resources, young people on the verge of high-risk decisions, and those reentering from the criminal justice system, people that seldom, if ever, contact city officials. Carl Kenny is an experienced neighborhood organizer who's helping us with the plan as well. He's an adjunct professor at the University of Missouri School of Journalism and our contractor, skilled in building local decision-making structures. His work in Durham, North Carolina, encouraged residents there to take their future into their own hands, leading to lasting change rather than one-off interventions. So we're hosting our first meeting in the Central Neighborhood tomorrow at St. Luke Church, 204 East Ash Street, by the way. Come if you can. We invite you to join us for a meal from 4 to 6, and then we'll join the meeting at 6 to 8. One of my favorite things there, we're going to have a bus, an electric bus right there. We're having a hard time finding bus drivers. So we're going to have a laptop on the bus and ask folks who want a job to apply so they can do it right on the bus. So in effect, Columbia is two cities. It also has two minds regarding public safety. Our crime rates are down. We would have to double, triple, and quadruple our crime rates to match those in Springfield, Kansas City, and St. Louis, respectively. So even our crime rates as they drop, so too has citizen satisfaction with public safety. So our goal is to increase the percentage of citizens who are satisfied with the overall quality of police services. Over the last 10 years, satisfaction with police services has dropped 20%. Crime rate's at an all-time low. So to understand that lost ground, even with the crime rate falling, we held anonymous citizen focus groups conducted by an independent consultant to try to learn why perception doesn't match reality. Most participants reported positive contacts with and trust in our police officers. Few had ever been affected by crime, and many wished to see more officers in the community. Many said that local media had influenced their perception of safety and acknowledged the events of Ferguson and mass shootings across the country as informing their belief that it wasn't safe. So the police department's new community outreach unit's all about officers connecting with citizens in the focus neighborhoods. And our strategic timing couldn't be better. Citizens helped choose and have welcomed their officers as a stable influence. And CPD has the right mix of leaders, management, and officers with the right hearts for and minds, by the way, for this kind of work. It's not a one-off. They're building for the future. Sergeant Mike Hester and his officers are making positive contacts in their neighborhood visits and at special events. He says that citizens are highly receptive to welcoming the police back and seeing police interacting with citizens again. So as cops and citizens of all ages connect, he's seeing fewer hard stares. It's getting more handshakes, hugs. That is one of our metrics. So here's a Facebook post from a driver that was stranded at the I-70 and Highway 63 corridor. Many of you know about this. When no one had the patience or the time to help me, this officer not only helped me, but he took me to Walmart and he bought me a new car battery. Officer Jeff, she got your rank wrong, sorry about that. You are my hero. So Lieutenant Jeff Jones had this to say about it. Many officers would have found a way to help this young lady. She was supportive of us publicly, even with some personal attacks from her friends. This was Facebook, after all. She was courageous, more so than me that day. Well, Lieutenant Jones is right. Our whole police force is in the habit of helping. And I love it when citizens catch city employees doing something and share those stories. As these go viral across social media, it confirms the public's power to counter negative information with a powerful true story of caring, courageous public service. Well, this year, it's possible that both our police and fire departments will be accredited, and accreditation is the gold standard for non-biased external validation that we provide services using the best practices in the field today. All right, I'm going to pivot to our infrastructure needs, such as transportation networks, utilities, parks. These are big-time investments that connect Columbia. They serve the public good, but as the community's grown and changed, they aren't serving all citizens equally well. So no matter your neighborhood, you should be able to shop and find services, either nearby or using safe, convenient, personal or public transit. In a city that treasures parks and trails, everyone should have green space within walking distance. Wherever you live, water, sewer, electric, and storm water systems should be safe and reliable. Our goal is to increase daily average ridership at the bus stop level in our focus neighborhoods. Introduce more residents to Como Connect. Community outreach officers and Central Missouri Community Action employees are distributing bus passes in the focus neighborhoods. So whether the passes are good for one ride or a month or even a whole year, they create positive community connections. And our hope is to introduce folks to the transit system that haven't experienced it before. So at the request of North neighborhood residents, the City Council quickly approved more street lighting near Auburn Hills Park. We've built new sidewalks in the central neighborhood on Garth Avenue near Oak Towers. The community has supported ballot issues for sewer and stormwater improvements in the past year. And with that support, we're investing $14 million into relining sewer pipes. We continue to remedy flooding in the First Ward. Our test results show that sewer lining efforts are paying good dividends. Gates Park is our new 60-acre natural area near High Point Lane and Route K. This purchase will preserve green space, protect Little Bonfim Creek, and provide access to a future trail. So, the Council's strategic plan could not be implemented without the dedication of our staff. City employees are a 1,450-person force for good. In strategic terms, they are our creative strength and our heart. They are work colleagues. They're connected to each other and ultimately connected to the community through friendships, their business patronage, the organizations they volunteer for and support, and all the things they do as parents and family members. I'm intensely proud of their commitment to serving all citizens and putting special care into the central, north, and east neighborhoods over the next 3 years. Our goal is to increase employee engagement. Now, this is difficult in the city because our workforce is already twice as engaged as the public is the private sector. Right, so our engagement is linked to a strong public service calling. It's something that comes from inside. It's something we hire for. And stoking that fire, we know, will improve our performance and create lasting public benefits. The City of Columbia attempts to foster a work family that is representative of our community as well as we can. Diversity means opening the doors to people of all different races, generations, genders, backgrounds. Inclusion for us means creating a work environment where all employees, not just some, can thrive. There's that word again. Some of our work units are both diverse and inclusive, providing hubs for friendship, trust, professional growth, and advancement. But still there are gaps in the organization and the community's perception. So we're joining other local leaders in recognizing and eliminating institutional biases we might have. These biases are based on race, disability, other perceptions that can separate us as human beings. So last December, 140 of our managers and supervisors attended classes on diversity and inclusion. 15 employees participated in building inclusive communities workshops, including the majority of the city council. By the end of this year, we expect to have 6 certified in-house trainers available to offer basic and advanced workshops to other employees. We also expect that all sworn Columbia police officers will complete training related to racial profiling and fair and impartial policing. I believe they do a great job for that, but we're going to just check. We're going to touch base on that. Over the last 2 years, our customer contact center has reduced the number of possible phone numbers you might have to search through to reach us by more than half. So we see a future where, unless there's an emergency, 911, or a need for a text telephone, that there's only one number you have to remember to reach the city. And we're already getting rave reviews from customers. They love not getting transferred from office to office when they call. They love getting the right answer to the question they have. And they love seeing potholes filled just a few days after they call us about it. So the contact center's doing great work already. So I'm proud of what our staff has done in 8 short months on a very small budget made up of last year's savings. And we aspire for steady, if perhaps slow, progress in the coming year. So thank you all for caring about our community through your partnerships, where you're helping us achieve our goals, through your ideas, and simply by being involved in this great work. So look around you today and look at the people who are bailing the water. We truly are making a difference. Well, thank you very much. I would like to invite Ian Thomas to come up and share some comments. After all, it's 1/7 of your plan, and I would love for you to take the microphone, please. And then we'll do Q&A after that.
Well, thanks very much, Mike. And good morning, everybody. Poverty doesn't just happen. Massively unequal access to opportunity and a decent life is not a fact of nature that we can't do anything about. These are conditions that have been created through a misuse of power and influence. But that means that they can be reversed through political leadership and public policy grounded in social equity. With that in mind, I was delighted when Mike showed that political leadership last year by highlighting inequities in our community. And I'm equally delighted to see how much progress has been made in a very short time, building awareness about these issues, and the implementation of neighborhood engagement, community policing, and affordable housing programs, among many others. There's still a lot of work to do. And I recently distributed a list of my top policy priorities for the next 3 years, which are in tune with the social equity plan. They include improving the level of service of our public transportation system, expanding the new community policing program, and establishing a city office of equity. I really believe that the city of Columbia turned a very important corner last year when we adopted a strategic plan focused on social equity. And I'm very hopeful about what we will accomplish as we keep moving in this direction. Thanks very much to the city staff, and thanks to you for being here.
All right, are there questions or comments? Oh, you know, that's such a tough one, actually.
You knew I was going to ask.
I did, and I should have been prepared for that. Last year, I think I said 10 because things looked very bright, and we were very excited about our path forward. Still excited about our path forward, but there are some big financial storm clouds coming, one of which is the massive tax break the federal government gives to Amazon. It is just sucking money out of our economy. And it's all the services we care about that are funded through sales tax. police, fire, parks, sidewalks, streets, everything you care about the city provides is funded through sales tax. And Amazon doesn't pay it because the federal government gives that to them as a massive subsidy. At this point, I'm pretty sure the internet's not a fad. I don't think Amazon's gonna go away if they treat them the way they treat Walmart and make them pay their share of taxes. So my great hope is Marketplace Fairness Act will pass in the federal government, and it will begin to reinvest in our services. So our revenue, the whole point of that, our revenue is really constrained. Our revenue was flat this year, so we're having to cut 3% of our budget for next year just to deal with the lack of sales tax revenue. And there are other revenue sources that are also down, also related to economic activity. So I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give us an 8. There are no ballots that I'm aware of that are coming forward, so it won't be a request for a new tax per se. And frankly, unless the federal government fixes the problem, stops, subsidizing Amazon, that's a sinking ship. You know, anymore, it's just going to be less and less each year.
Situation, you said crime is down, but satisfaction is down. How would you change that?
As much as I hate to say it, our best hope's social media, because we get to connect directly with people. And no offense, I love you all, but it cuts the press out of the messaging, right? And the unfortunate truth is, in a marketplace, you have to sell product, right? Ads still pay the bills, and people buy ads on stations and papers that get a lot of readership and viewership. And for some reason, we human beings are really motivated by crime and punishment. It's every television show. You look at the websites of the newspaper, it's all crime all the time. In fact, I'll just pick on, well, I won't pick on one. You're all bad. but if you pull up the website, they're so desperate to report crime, you have to go pretty far away from Columbia to get it. Now, there's always something to talk about Columbia. We're not crime-free. I'm not saying that. But when most of your articles are about places that I wouldn't drive to on a day trip, you're stretching, and that's where we are. So we have to battle that. And what we did was we did focus groups. And we had to spend money to go do this to prove our theory was really what was going on. And our community members came together and they told us, yeah, we didn't know crime rate was down. Never saw that on the news. We thought it was out of control. The press, it's just crime all the time. So it's clear that there's a connection between the amount of media you consume and how fearful you are of crime. There are many studies that prove that. In fact, it's funny because the more you talk about it, even if it's positive, the more fearful of your safety you become. So the people who don't read the paper, don't watch TV news, are much happier than all of us.
Mike, may I just add?
Yes, Ian, that? Please.
Also responding to the question about the perception and satisfaction of the police department, I really think that our community outreach units program, the community policing neighborhood engagement program, is going to improve those perceptions. We've heard already from the neighborhoods where that more proactive, participatory policing process is taking place. People's satisfaction levels are higher. And I, for one, will be pushing hard to increase that program. We are going to need to increase the funding and the staffing of the police department to do that, because we do have long response times for a lot of crimes, and we have a status zero situation all too frequently. But I think that's the way to go, and I think that the community is going to support that.
Down. I have the numbers from when we first started doing the survey, and you're right, it's down about 20%. 20% for each of those. You talked about problems with perception of safety and how media and national trends may play into that, which for perception, that's probably a fair analysis. Satisfaction is down 20%, but when I look at national trends and data from Gallup and Pew, you don't see that huge drop in 15 years or however long we've been doing this. There's some decrease in the last couple of years, but it remained relatively steady over that period of time. So from what I'm looking at with national data, there seems to be, Columbia seems to be a little bit of an outlier. Am I misinterpreting that? Is there a reason for that? And is the community outreach unit enough to address that?
Well, we should compare notes. I could, there's Gallup information that, in fact, they do a question nationwide each year about how much you trust the police, and that's fallen nationwide. I forget what the number is now. It went from 70-some-odd percent to 60-something in that time frame. So I think it is a national phenomenon. It might be more intense in Columbia. I don't know. I haven't done that analysis. So is the community outreach unit enough? That's a great question. It's all we can think to do for a couple reasons. One, we don't have a bunch of new money to pour into programs, right? So we have to do things we can do. Two, we know community policing works. The chief has long experience in community policing. I've done it in my past career, not personally. I've been involved in the program. And I've watched it transform the community's relationship. So it is a powerful tool. It's one tool, but it works. It's pretty simple, really. We're all human beings, and if I never see you get out of the car, I can think anything I want. But when I interact with you and know you as a person, because you've left the car and you're walking around the neighborhood, I have a much better feeling about you as a person and my own belief that, oh, you're actually out here. You're focused on the neighborhood. You know what's going on. You know who is experiencing real stress that you could go help with and who isn't. And so it's a real shift in mindset, too, for officers, frankly. It's a shift from an old-fashioned warrior mentality to a guardian mentality. So it's a shift to taking stewardship of the neighborhood. This is my neighborhood. I'm going to take care of this place. So that's hard to maintain when you're going call to call to call to call. You don't really have time as a standard patrol officer to do that. So what we've done is pull for these three neighborhoods, two officers in each, and given them the freedom to focus on the stewardship that we hired them to have and that they innately have. We selected them for these traits, right? We select all employees for that trade. And I think that's why we're twice as engaged as private companies. So is it enough? It's certainly proven to be the most powerful thing you can do to engage. And we're going to communicate directly with our community. So I think it'll work. Let's skip here and then we'll get there. Lynn.
You mentioned loss of the revenue to Amazon. Is there a way that you're assessing that, or do you have an idea of how much revenue has been lost to Amazon?
Yes, there's a great study recently done. I can't remember the name of the company, but you can Google it. It's funny, the internet will help you here. It's a nonprofit firm that studied Amazon, just Amazon, because it's one company you can grab it. There's more to the internet than just Amazon, but they're all getting this massive subsidy from the federal government on our back, by the way. So it's doubly insulting to me, but it's specific to Missouri, and they calculate that cities in Missouri lost $60 million last year to Amazon, and that the state government, if you extrapolate that, they charge twice as much sales tax as cities do. They would have lost $120 million to Amazon. So that's the impact, and if you look at our community compared to the rest of Missouri, I think we probably use the internet a lot more than a typical city, right? Look at our demographics. I'll exaggerate here, but people under 40 use it a lot for buying things, and we have a pretty young population.
So we don't really know how much it's actually impacting the
city. We know how much less per capita revenue we get on sales tax over the last 10 years, and that's right around $10 million. And I believe that it's all due to the internet. If you look at the retail offerings in town, there's more of it, right, than there was 10 years ago. But we're spending less per capita. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I wanted to buy a $10 book, and I chose Amazon rather than Yellow Dog Books over here. If I buy it at Yellow Dog, I pay $10.85. That's the tax rate. If I buy it at Amazon, it's $10. And, you know, I get the great joy of not having to leave the house, right? They send it to me. That 85 cents, 20 cents of it comes to the city, to our community. So the rest goes to the state and the county and others, but 20 of that 85 cents comes to us. And it funds police and fire and parks and sidewalks and streets and all that. So when I make the choice, for convenience sake, that one button makes it really easy, right? To buy the book on Amazon versus Yellow Dog, I am defunding everything I care about in the city. My choice affects everyone in the community that way. So it's a kind of a perverse set of circumstances that got us here, but the feds can... Yeah, 10 million is our best guess right now. That's grown into an annual figure.
Annual.
Yeah, so 10 million every year. So if the federal government would do something about marketplace fairness, and if the state would adopt the streamlined sales and use tax, and they're getting closer each year, we would not need any more taxes. The revenue would support our vision for policing.
And in addition to the loss of sales tax to the city for city services, of course, when we make our purchases online, we also deprive our locally owned businesses of that revenue and the jobs that they provide and keeping our wealth in our community.
I'm going to just hang out up here.
That's mostly for you.
Richard.
You said there was a number for citizens to call for services. Would you give that number out, and I would like to make a follow-up?
I think it's 874-CITY. Did I get that right, Carol? Oh, I didn't even have to look. 874-CITY.
If you call the information number 874, I think it's 7111 here, most of the times they will not give out numbers for departments. Is there a reason for that? And they also are screening calls. Would you explain that to us, please, why they won't give out department phone numbers? Obviously, if you go on Google, you can get them or other directories.
Well, partly, one of the things we're trying to do is provide better information and not send you on the ping pong or the pinball machine of guessing which desk you need to call. Most people guess wrong because, frankly, we're a complicated organization. And so you call the wrong person and they do their best. They think, well, I think you should talk to so-and-so. They transfer you over. Well, five transfers later, you still don't have your answer, right? That's the old way of doing things. There were 154 phone numbers that we published in the phone book. And dropping satisfaction every year with the amount of frustration people feel getting that pinball effect. So we've scrapped that, and we've said, you know, let's have one number, and let's train those folks really well so they know the answer. They have the right answer. And we're about halfway to that vision. We've got about 70 of those 150 handled in the contact center. So we really are going to steer folks to that number more and more over time.
But if I wanted to call, have the number for Parks and Rec, why wouldn't they give me that number when I call the 874-111? Or should I just call the 874-CITY number for that number?
I would just call the help desk, 874-CITY.
And they will give me the number for the department?
Well, if you really need the other number, frankly, it's probably going to stop working over time. We're not going to keep paying for the phone number, right? So you can have the number. It's a public thing, right? So But we are trying to steer people away from the old approach.
I'd like to go back to perception versus reality in terms of crime rates. And, you know, part of it you say is because of the media, which, you know, could be a fair statement. But when you look at Missouri Uniform Crime Reporting Program, we found that violent crime is up from 2014 to 2015 by 46%. Violent crime.
Well, that's crazy.
Well, okay, so violent crime.
That's just not true.
Violent crime in 2014, we have 410. In 2015, we have 600. Rape in 2014, 63. Rape in 2015, 80.
So you're counting a couple things. So the definition of rape changed. That's one. Okay. And in fact, I think it's probably good it changed. I think we're counting it more accurately. But it doesn't mean that more is happening. It just means we've changed how we count it, and so we're capturing more. If you look at, it's really important to maintain perspective when you have these little blips. So let me just share with you how we look at it. This really comes out of statistics, right? So crime goes up and down every year. It bounces around. And there's a standard deviation of that volume of calls. And what types? So if it goes down by one standard deviation, we don't get too worked up about it because that's the norm, that's standard. There's nothing we can do about it, right? If it goes up by three, holy mackerel, something's going on here. We've got to do something about this. So we have to dig in and study that individual problem. There are at least 1,000 reasons people behave badly and commit crimes. And we do a good job catching them. Now, the hard thing is preventing people from making bad decisions. We can't be there, right? But we don't know they're going to do these things. So where we have an idea that might be happening, then we try to do our best. Community policing is a great example. People will come and share with us what they know about someone's decision-making, and we can intervene and talk to them. We're having great conversations with some folks about that. So in terms of the statistics, here's one I like better, right? So there were 9 murders in, what, 2009 or something like that? We had one last year. So, you know, you can work hard and find a little blip and say it's increasing, but it's not really. It's just the standard deviation. And our standard deviation now is way down. Property crimes are half of what they were in the 80s. Half. And that's the highest volume of crime, right? By far, property crimes are the most. And think about a college town. We think of ourselves as a small town, Missouri safe place, and we are. But we really ought to lock our doors. And many of us just don't. And most of the burglaries happen because people just try doors. They walk down dorm rooms or streets, they try doors. So if you leave it open, you know, they knock. Anybody home? No, you went to the store. You didn't even close your garage. Well, that's where most property crime happens in Columbia. So keep perspective. There was a little bit, a little bump up in 15, but it's not an increase in violent crime. It's a couple things acting there. One is a change of how we define rape. We're counting men now, so that's a big issue that I think is right. So that's helpful.
Could either of you make a comment on the Vision Zero initiative and how you hope that will impact public safety in a city that has so many impatient and distracted drivers and we're so saturated with the auto culture?
There are a lot of issues to solve in any community, and they all take work. And I think one of the best things we can do is see where, with relatively little work, we can make a big impact on a big problem. And I think that traffic deaths and serious injuries is a great example of that. Something like 40 or 50,000 people are killed on the roads in the United States every year. And Missouri has its proportion of that, and Columbia has its proportion of that. And there's been a culture of accepting that as sort of an inevitable part of being a driving culture. But it really doesn't need to be. Other countries have demonstrated that if you take political leadership, the same kind of political leadership that we're talking about with regard to social equity, and there is a social equity component to this traffic safety initiative, you can dramatically reduce those crashes, the severity of those crashes, and the number of people that are killed and severely injured. Vision Zero is a great example of a program like that. The New York Police Department, Traffic Department, and the New York Taxi Cab Group came together, crafted a Vision Zero policy that was adopted by the New York City Council and is now being implemented, and there are very significant declines in deaths and serious injuries on the roads of New York City. About 15 other cities across the United States have followed suit and adopted similar Vision Zero policies, and another 30 or so, including Columbia, Missouri, are considering doing that. I think it will be an incredible step forward. It will not cost a lot of money. It will save a lot of lives. Thanks for the question, Joe.
It looks like we have time for one more, so I'll defer to Caitlin, and then we'll wrap up.
Mentioned the affordable housing investments the city has made. I don't know how many homes per year that equates to. But you also mentioned the continued work with Glenn Cobbins, Judy Hubbard, and Carl Kenny. My understanding is that work is being paid for with surplus funds, and that's a one-time allocation. That's not a long-term position. What are the plans you have to address that problem long-term?
And don't forget Jim Witt as well. So we, when we started to implement the council's plan, I looked around the organization and I felt like there was some talent we needed and didn't really have on hand. So I reached out to some folks that I'd heard of, folks I'd met, who really nailed that. And thank goodness they were willing to work for what we could afford, partly because, you know, they care about this, right? They're probably more passionate than we are about this. So it's a beautiful connection, but you're right. The difficulty is we're using one-time funds. So for both Mr. Kenny and Mr. Witt, that's a contract. So it's a one clearly defined set of work, a book of work, and once that's accomplished, the contract ends. So that's the best way to use one-time money is do it that way. We're using some funds in the budget, in the temp budget, to convince Glenn and Judy to go door to door for us. They're doing an excellent job, and I appreciate so much your willingness to do it. That's a tough job. Those of you who've ever gone door to door understand that. And the challenge is, how do we keep doing that? Because that's going to be a longer term need than the first two contracts will be. And that's just something we're going to have to deal with each year in the budget as it comes up. And this year, it's a pretty austere year. You know, we're actually cutting the budget. So on that note, I'll be delivering the recommended draft budget to council at the end of July, so a few weeks from now. And then the council will discuss it, debate it, change what they'd like to change, and approve it by the end of September. So there'll be at least four public meetings. So if you need a good night's sleep, you just pick that up and read the budget, right? No, I'm kidding. It's critically important. And it'll hit the internet pretty soon on the internet. So I should say the state of the city, by the way, is available on our website. So if you want to get more detail, the speech today was a trimmed down version. I didn't figure you'd want to be here for 2 hours, so we stuck to the high points, but there is more detail in the state of the city. I hope you can find the time to get it. So thank you all very much for coming. Appreciate your interest.